Peace, 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 everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of In Defense of Liberation, the show that is working towards and educating about true people's liberation movements and revolution. I'm your host, Josh. I am trans. That is kind of what we're here to talk about today. I haven't spent too much time talking about it on the show just because I don't know, I have a hard time speaking about certain parts of me. Not only just because of the public facing intention of the show, but of course there's also things I'm still figuring out about myself. But for folks who don't know, I am a trans woman. I use she, her pronouns. Very early on in my kind of self-discovery moment here, journey, whatever you want to call it. In the process of beginning HRT. Excited. Exciting. Hopefully. But there's a lot about life that, has been hard, I guess. It's weird because growing up, of course, for folks who've listened to the show before might have heard me mention that my family growing up was extremely religious, extremely evangelical, Protestants, it's kind of hard to explain the sort of religious that they were, because, like, they weren't crazies or fanatics in the sense that they tend to come off as just boring straight people. Americans just in their 60s, But when you engage with them, when you actually talk to them, when you ask their opinion about things, it's very clear that, their faith, their belief in God, their, belief specifically in, Jesus Christ as a almighty savior, the Holy Spirit, etc., and the teachings of the Bible, which they read, the version, the transcription, the translation, that is what primarily leads their understanding of the world. But it also kind of sort of led the way that I thought for a very long time, even though I never really made it to the level of faith or belief that they have. I was never able to fully break from skepticism and from disagreements with large tenets, large parts of the practice. So anyways, it was growing up, looking back, a lot more difficult than maybe I recognized it to be in the moment. Because a lot of what I dealt with was not physical abuse or physical trauma. It was more psychological, more mental, right? And it had a lot to do with isolation rather than more neglect rather than abuse, until you get to the point of indoctrination. And again, I said most of how I thought was similarly to them, primarily led by my belief or my attempt to believe in God and Jesus Christ, my fear of sin, my fear of the devil, whatever. And it made it so hard for me to really relate to people for a couple different reasons. One, I never really formed or figured out who I was. So very hard to relate to others when you don't even really know who you are. And the second reason is because, of course, the indoctrination, the isolation, all of this basically took me out of the real world and put me into this bubble of things that I was taught and told and meant to accept. And the same happened with my folks, the same happened with their folks. Outside of just even religion, most of our education, most of our political beliefs come through a process of indoctrination. Meaning, we are taught something at a certain point in our lives, and we are meant to accept it. We are not taught how to learn about and understand the world. We are instead taught to view the world or think of the world in a very concrete, rigid way without being taught the actual reasons why we might believe these things, never being taught how to come to our own conclusions about things. We don't receive an education or information in a way which is supposed to show the interrelated nature of life and the interconnectedness of information of the world. But instead, you know, we get taught like this. Okay, here's 37 minutes of math class. Here goes 37 minutes of information that you're going to tuck away into your math compartment, right, in your brain. Then we're going to skip to 37 minutes, and I should say 37 minutes, that was the time of my periods, like high school periods for classes growing up. It might have been different for y'all. So, you know, here's a half an hour to 40 minutes of science class, and that information is going to get compartmentalized in the science, you know, drawer in my brain. But none of it is meant to be alive. None of it is meant to be information that empowers you to understand and to analyze the world around you. But instead, it's meant to be information, as I said, that you accept as fact and that sculpts the view that you have of the world. Now, I started talking off of, you know, started off talking about being trans and kind of, you know, what that was like a little bit. I was able to spend some time with some friends of mine today. Friends that I've not ever been able to hang out with before. One of whom I work with and the other whom is their partner. They are both trans. And they are in a non-monogamous relationship. And it was interesting talking with my friend's partner. Very sad, but also very interesting. Sharing the experiences that we'd had growing up and kind of finding out things about ourselves, trying to share those with our, you know, friends and family, and what kind of reactions we've gotten. Now, I'm 24. I'm coming into these realizations a little late, but not very. Unlike some of the kids growing up now, until I was like 16, maybe a little earlier, I don't think I'd ever even heard the word transgender. Maybe had heard slurs, but had no clue what they meant. And it wasn't until my partner's friend growing up came out that I actually started to learn anything about trans people. Really, it wasn't until about this point that I started to learn anything about LGBTQ plus people, culture, experience, history. And at the time, I was very reactionary. At the time, I said awful things, things that I wish I could take back. And it was, I feel, coming from a place of fear of how these questions, how these people whose lives and experiences were quite different to what I had grown up with and seen, and how that made me feel. Because there's always been a part of me that has questioned the fact that I was straight. When I was much younger, it was a homophobic fear of being gay. I always was scared I was gay. Because I would, you know, be attracted to men. And of course I could not share this with anybody, couldn't talk to anybody about it, so just sat on my chest as a worry. I had a cousin, Marcus, was the only gay, like, outwardly, openly gay family member of mine on my father's side. And he was pretty well tortured his whole life by my family. You know, they'd always say that they loved him, but that they just disagreed with his lifestyle. That type of homophobia. And there were some more explicit, awful things said over the years. And unfortunately, my cousin ended up passing away a few years ago, under some not so good circumstances. And I think seeing the way that my cousin was treated and hearing the things that I heard from my family about another member of my family and about other queer folks, it certainly never encouraged me to want to look into these things about myself. So I did what basically every other person in mine or a similar position does, and I suppressed everything. I repressed everything. Well, you can only do that for so long. What queer people who are out or not to themselves or to others, who have experienced things, who have understood things about themselves, who have questions, the way in which many of us are forced to resolve these questions within ourselves is very unhealthy. We know that abuse of all sorts is rampant against the LGBTQ plus community. We know many young folks and older folks who are abandoned by their families, neglected, or outright, you know, abused by folks who are supposed to love them unconditionally, by people who are supposed to care about them. Many of us have to live in the closet, hide parts of ourselves, lie about parts of ourselves, because we live with and work around or exist around people who aren't accepting, who have no concern or compassion for us, who really don't want queer friends or queer family members. And for many of us, this is a death sentence. For many of us, this is a lifetime of insecurities, of self-hatred, of self-harm. For many of us, this is a life of loneliness, of addiction, of isolation, of anxiety and depression. For many of us, this is a life lived almost unconditionally on the defense. But it's time that we take on the offense. We have to understand that queer liberation, liberation of all peoples, must and can only look like a world where we are in charge, where we are in control of our own resources, of our own lives, of our own destinies. We cannot build or create such a society within the existing environment and conditions that we have today. As I began to understand these things about myself, as I began to come up with some answers to some of my own and other people's questions, I began to worry. I began to worry because, as a cis straight man, there are things I didn't need to worry about. As a cis straight heterosexual white man, there's a lot of things I didn't have to worry about. And as a white trans woman, a queer woman, there's still a lot of things I'm not going to have to deal with. But being queer, being trans, being gay, being a lesbian, being bisexual, being non-binary or non-monogamous is not always safe. I'm living in central New York at the moment, and I've grown up here. It's a beautiful area. Naturally, it's one of my favorite places in the, you know, world, considering I've only been to so few. The landscape is wonderful. I love walking around. I like the seasons. But I can't stay here. I can't stay in my childhood home, in the city I grew up in. Because we have elected officials, police chiefs, bishops, priests, pastors, teachers, military officials, who are explicitly anti-LGBTQ+. And I know I'm not the only, you know, this isn't the only area. This is far from it. And I, you know, sad to say, it's not the worst. Florida, Texas, these other places, it's getting real, real scary. And unfortunately, none of this is new. We think that progress has been made. There's a veneer of progress with corporations and universities and academia and video games and media beginning to portray certain experiences, beginning to, quote, represent, unquote, some of the many, many different experiences that queer folk go through around the world. But at the same time, we know that this veneer of progress has not led to an end to violence. It has not put a stop to hate. It has not finally ended the ongoing attacks on LGBTQIA+ people. Because of this, we must always be on guard. Like those who are oppressed and repressed, exploited for other reasons. LGBTQIA+ people are not able to just live. They are not able to just exist. As I was talking with my friend's partner today, we made a point to say that those who are fearful or angry at, intimidated by, or aggressive towards queer folks in general, first of all, tend not to even know why, could not explain why they are upset or it's a problem that someone happens to be gay or someone happens to be trans. The second thing we pointed out is oftentimes they did not come up with these ideas themselves. And in fact, as we were mentioning earlier, were indoctrinated throughout their lives into believing a certain notion of normalcy or mainstream existence was the cutoff, and everything else was unacceptable or taboo. This was taught to them. This is not something they were born with. This is not something that they came to their own conclusions about. The third thing we said is that these folks tend to be not only pathetic and illogical, but impractical. Because the type of actions that they choose to try to, say, get rid of queer people tends to create more queer people in the same way that repression breeds resistance. It wasn't until my friend's, you know, father, what he calls his sperm donor, began to really verbally abuse him about his transition, that he really was fully and able to confidently take that step because of the resentment and hatred that he felt for his father. And it's crazy to think, because again, the last thing we concluded on and agreed on is that queer people, gay people, are not out here as a threat. They're not doing anything violent. They're not attacking people as a group. Sure, you can take any group and you can find an individual that's crazy or that's violent or is whatever, and you can say, oh, look, so-and-so is violent and they're queer, so look, queer people are violent. But when you look at the mass of the population, who is it that commits the most violent, abusive, and aggressive crimes? It's not people of color. It's not indigenous people. It's not queer people. It's not women. It's heterosexual straight men. And that's not something inherent in their blood or in their, you know, being. But that is because systems and structures are in place to prop them up, to prop up the wealthy, to prop up the powerful, and prop up a certain kind of people to be wealthy and to be powerful, aka more heterosexual white men. And in doing so, you're emboldening, encouraging, and enriching the group of people that commits the most vain, the most violent, the most criminal acts of human abuse against other humans. You systematize that. You structure that. You get a profit from that, and you have capitalism. You have imperialism. Because, like the enslavement of Africans, like the abuses and genocide against indigenous peoples, like the theft of land, like the exploitation of the poor and the working class, queer repression is a part of class society. It is a part of the whole system geared towards exploiting as many people as is possible for the wealth and accumulation of profits, property, and control into the hands of fewer and fewer people. Back to the point about representation quick. If among these wealthy, powerful people, there happens to be a woman, or there happens to be an African, or there happens to be a queer person, that does not mean all of a sudden that capitalism is becoming progressive. That does not mean all of a sudden we have a new society or a new way of running things. What that means is that so much wealth has been stolen from the world that now not only are new and different people able to do so and make their own coin, but now capitalism and imperialism, as always, has to reform, rehash, reorganize itself so as not to be overthrown. What's a really good way to do that? Pick the groups of people who are most depressed. Start putting some of them in higher places. Start allowing for some small amounts of people from those communities to have upward mobility of a very minimal amount. And for extremely minuscule groups of people, like, so low. And yet, the ability for, say, a Barack Obama, or, I don't know, when, you know, companies like Target have, like, Pride Month, all of a sudden there is a support for, or a concern for, or a contentedness for this almost offhanded accidental representation because of how little and how poor we have it. Folks have it. Folks are. I mean, Africa is so exploited that the simple fact that Africans can be in a position of political power at one point was monumental. Now we realize that simply having a woman, or simply having a Mexican, or simply having a Puerto Rican in a position of power does not necessarily mean, first of all, that that person is working towards the interests of their people, of their constituents, of the community that put them there. And second of all, it most certainly does not mean that that community at large has progressed, has advanced, has been able to gain from this. And many times it sets folks backwards. Because now we feel we've accomplished something. Now we feel things have happened for us. Now we feel change has taken place, when in fact it has not. When in fact now they're trying to put at the helm of a sinking ship Africans, indigenous people, women, LGBTQ plus folks, almost as if they want to have an out or a scapegoat to blame as shit goes south. If the United States falls out of favor with the world in 10 years, they can say, we need to go back to our roots. Because women are in charge now, and queer people are in power, and African folks are in power. And obviously that's the reason why things have gotten worse. I'm rambling at this point, but What I'm meaning to say is that unless as a group, as a community, as a mass of people, queer folks, Africans, indigenous people, women, Latin Americans, Asians, unless they are able to come together consciously, understand the plight, the situation, and work towards overcoming it, work towards overthrowing it, work towards resolving contradictions both with themselves and with their oppressors. Until they are able to do that, until we are able to do that, it doesn't matter who is the president, it doesn't matter who our mayor is, it doesn't matter who's on the movie screen, and it certainly doesn't matter who's making music, because what they're doing is making money off of you, making money off of me, making money off of us. They're getting powerful, maybe not, you know, in a real concrete long-term way, but, you know, someone like a Timothy Chalamet or Selena Gomez or a Channing Tatum or a Taylor Swift, they have their moment, they have their wealth, and they have their level of pull. Whereas you and I, going to work every single day, going to school, living our lives, we don't even get that. We don't even get celebrity. So you can have celebrities or representatives or politicians or corporations that come along and try to present themselves as progressive. But unless they are fundamentally against the exploitation of human being by human being that is capitalism, unless they are fundamentally against the continuation of colonization and imperialism, and unless they are fundamentally against the idea that reform within this system is possible, then objectively, they cannot and will not do anything fundamentally different. Because they will all, women, lesbian, gay, straight, disabled, African, indigenous, you know, trans, what have you, they will all be there with the same or similar strategies and tactics. And that is, overall, as an objective, to save the status quo, to continue as, quote, normal as possible, and in doing so, make an attempt to either gain a slice of the pie for themselves, or for their family, or for their friends, but never, almost never, to abolish and overthrow the exploitative, extractive, destructive, and inhumane system of capitalism imperialism. We as queer people do not need gay business people. We do not need trans war criminals. We need revolutionaries. We need freedom fighters. We need folks willing to fight for full liberation. And to do so, we need to understand ourselves what that means. What is liberation? What are we looking for? I cannot answer this question for you. I can only share my thoughts and my experiences and my own conclusions, my own theories. I can share the things I've learned, the things I've thought, the things I've disagreed with, the things I used to think. But I can never decide for you. No one can decide for you what you need, especially if they never even ask. We don't need more representatives. We need political power. We need control over our humanity. We need housing. We need education. We need healthcare. We need political power. And the only way to do so is through struggle. So we must struggle with ourselves internally, meaning, you know, you yourself with yourself, ourselves internally within our own communities. But especially, we need to struggle alongside with and through internal, external disagreements, contradictions with others fighting for liberation. And especially, we must struggle against our oppressors. We must struggle against the capitalist and imperialist pigs who continue to exploit and oppress people around the world. We must struggle against the reactionary church, the reactionary religions. We must struggle against the repressive laws, miseducation, and misinformation. We must struggle against colonialism and continued indigenous genocide of Africans, of indigenous Americans, of Asians. And we must fundamentally struggle against everything and anything that represents or leads back to this system, capitalism. Because capitalism, at the very core of everything that we are dealing with, everything that we are dealing with, comes down to profiteering, it comes down to power, and it comes down to exploitation. Until we fundamentally shift the characteristics that make up the function of our society, we will never, ever see change through representation or reform. The only way that real fundamental structural change can happen, of course, you know, I know, we all know, whether we want to admit it to ourselves or not, whether we want to commit to it or not, whether we want to discipline and dedicate ourselves or not, is revolution. And revolution is more than what meets the eye, more than what we think of, more than an insurrection, more than an act of violence, more than an upheaval. It is a destruction and reconstruction of something new. It is an epoch, era, generational long, and more attempt to circumvent, overcome, replace, reform, reconstruct, reorganize, and overthrow the contradictions and conditions that have led us to where we are today. Sometimes it sounds more philosophical or abstract than we mean it to be. Sometimes it sounds like a whole lot of hooey, whole lot of hoo-ha, a whole lot of bullshit. But we gotta recognize that right now, if you were to go into another time period and tell people how we are living today, they would say that sounds like bullshit. That sounds crazy. The United States doesn't produce anything, but they got a Dunkin' Donuts and an Amazon and a McDonald's on every fucking corner of every single block. They got a Starbucks and a Wendy's and a Target and a Walmart, but they don't got any factories producing medicine. They don't got people growing their own food. You got grocery stores full of food where people right around the corner are starving to death. And that's everywhere, not just in the States. But if you were to tell someone how advanced, quote-unquote, advanced, quote-unquote, civilization in some of the wealthiest and most powerful places in the world, like America, like Europe, if you were to tell someone how this advancement has only led to further degradation and dehumanization of the majority, I think almost anyone who had lived before now would be blown away and extremely depressed. Because I think we've all been under the impression, even those of us today, that advancements in things like technology, politics, you know, progressive representation, reforms, etc., would bring us to a better place. When in fact, we've marched forward through centuries while continuously moving backwards. We as human beings have more than any other human beings in the world could ever want or wish for. And yet we almost have nothing, because we control none of it. We own none of it. Revolution is an attempt through a process that includes many institutions, many tactics, many strategies, many people, to put in place a real attempt, a real foundation, which can allow for the overcoming of these conditions. By putting people in power, by placing power in the people's hands, we no longer have to wait for this or that person, this body, that body, this party, this group, this country, to save us. And we must know that nobody is coming to save us. And nobody was ever coming to save us. By taking power into our own hands, we say, we don't need anybody to save us. We don't need anybody to save us. We will save ourselves. And we will fight and we will struggle ourselves to see a better world, to create a better tomorrow. Because what else is the point of all of this? What is the point of all of this? Of human society, of human consciousness, of the earth. What is the point of life? If just to be contented with suffering, with other people's suffering, with our suffering. What good is it to be alive today if we are not willing to fight and struggle to make it so that tomorrow is better for not only ourselves, but for those around us and those we don't even know? What's the point? What is the point? That's all I got for you today, folks. I think there's some substance in there. Let me know what you think. All power to the people. Feel free to reach out. It's indefenseofliberation@gmail.com. And also indefenseofliberation on Instagram. We will talk to you soon. Peace, love, and power. Long live revolution.